You are listening to the Punk News Podcast number 707. We are rolling along. We're posting them weekly yet again. We've got a couple actually archive episodes I need to get up, and maybe I'll mix them this week or so. But otherwise, we're kind of back on track, Jack, back in black and ready to attack. So there you go. I couldn't think of any other words to rhyme with ack. So pack. Take that pack to your stack, because we're not whack, Mac. We do not lack. Posting podcasts in the front and the back.
Podcasts
And watch out for the yaks.
don't
And don't smoke crack. Crack is what you should lack.
Or maybe we shouldn't smoke crack. I don't
Maybe we should smoke stacks of crack. That will have an impact. Anyways, so
Well,
we're here with Sammy B, back in the crew, back in the hovercraft. Sam, how's it feel to be back in the hovercraft office?
It's great. Apparently, there's been an entire stack of crack on my desk. What did you guys do while I was gone? Like, did you
A
guys
lot
have
of
a party?
crack. We had a lot of crack, Sam. A lot of crack.
Oh boy. Well, I think I'm going to be cleaning out crack for a while. So, if anyone needs some, do not at us because I'm not selling yet. apparently.
Also, we are here with M Moore. M Moore, what's going on? What's
Hello.
happening? What's kicking?
What's happening? Ooh, fair amount of stuff.
Do you need crack?
Yeah, actually, need to stay awake. Yeah, I'll take some of that off your desk. Thank you. Thanks. Yet So, recovering from the last party we had.
well, there you have it. So we got some cool, not a huge news week this week, but some stuff to talk about. Excuse me now, I'm setting my timer for tomorrow because we're going to talk about this in a hot minute. Danzig tickets are finally going on sale after a debacle, so I'm setting a reminder on my phone so I can try to get Danzig New Year's Eve tickets. But listen, let's talk. We're going to talk about a couple things before we get into the actual news. One annoying thing and one cool thing, and then we're going to hit the news. Astute listeners might remember that probably about 2 or 3 years, actually more like 4 or 5 years ago, we did an episode where we just cold told like stories. It was like one happy story, one sad story, and one weird story or something.
Oh,
And
yeah.
you remember I told the story about how there was this guy that bought like 91 nursing homes, and he had no idea what he was doing, and he was getting all this federal and state money to run the nursing home, but instead of using it to run nursing homes, he was cutting way back on services and not paying employees. And he pocketed literally something like $300 million or something. And a bunch of people, old people, got sick and some died. And a lot of the states took over his nursing homes. And I was chasing him, literally across several states. And everything just seemed to bounce in his direction. And I brought him a deposition, or rather, actually, deposition in Pennsylvania, deposition in New Jersey. And I was dragging this guy all around. And the states didn't for some reason they were choosing not to prosecute him. Finally, they did choose to prosecute him, and they got some kind of a plea deal where he was only going to get like 3 months in prison. And that was so ridiculous that the judge threw it out and said, "Come back with a better plea deal because I'm not going to accept that." And they finally found him guilty of fraud and some other things, and he was sentenced to 3 years in federal prison and something like $50 million in restitution, which is still like one seventh of what he stole. But at least it's something. And so I'm like, finally, this douchebag is getting some comeuppance. This piece of shit, this evil person, right? Nicknamed Joseph Schwartz. Go look him up. Joseph Schwartz, Skyline Nursing Homes. Evil person. So anyways, he was set to go to jail, right? And I'm like, finally, after, I don't know why the federal government and the state governments didn't go after this guy 7 years ago when I was going after him. I still don't know why, you know? So, anyways, he was set to go to jail. And Sam and Em, guess what happened?
He didn't
He's
go
not
to
in jail.
jail.
You know why?
He died.
Mm-mm.
Oh boy, that was morbid. He fled the country?
No, but what he did, I believe he did flee the country. I believe I caused him to flee the country a couple of times, and he came back because he had to. But no, I'll give Sam the final guess. Sam, what do you think happened?
He found some crazy loophole and entered a black vortex and came back as another person.
Worse than that.
Oh
So
no.
let's look at the facts. This is a creep that had no nursing home experience, bought 91 nursing homes in like 2 years, which is insane. I don't even know how he's got these licenses. That is absolutely, I mean, imagine buying 91 pizzerias in 2 years. You know what I mean? Nevertheless, nursing homes, which are way, 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 way more complex. This douchebag got millions from Sam Yu, from me, not from him because he's in Canada, from you and me, Sam. He got our money and pocketed it himself when he was supposed to be using it for helping out old people, and old people got very sick and harmed to the point where the states took over a bunch of his nursing homes, right?
Yeah.
And then they gave him to a bunch of other creeps for whatever reason, obscene.
I'm
So
sure he had friends.
this guy's a bad guy, Joseph Schwartz. He's a real piece of shit. No, there's no other way. He's a piece of shit. Guess what? So here's what happened maybe 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago. Pardoned by Trump. Pardoned. And not only
Oh.
pardoned for his jail time,
Ooh.
restitution, completely pardoned. Doesn't have to give back a penny. Not one penny, even though he was convicted of stealing
Well,
$350 million or something like that.
wait. What?
Yeah,
Oh
right?
my God. Wait, okay. Was he one of those like people that went to Congress or on that
Oh, the
January
J
day?
no, he's way too old for it. I mean,
Oh, okay.
he this I mean, this guy's a piece of shit. I saw him in person a couple of times, and he was sweating and huffing and puffing, like, I don't know why you brought me out here. We're gonna do this in my office because I want to cause you to suffer, you asshole. This dude hasn't done any physical labor in his entire life, and if you think he's going to stand up for other people or other principles, no way, Sam. Good guess though. However, he did donate $1 million to the Trump campaign like 6 months ago or
Oh
12
my
months ago.
God.
He literally bought a pardon.
Ugh.
But check this out, Sam. I can't go into the specifics, but on paper, at one point, I know he had $0. Zero. On paper. Not in real life, but on paper. So if he's got $0 on paper, how can he donate $1 million to the Trump campaign?
Well, all of the finest rich people hide their monies in other assets.
Right.
Where we cannot trace them
Right.
might be under foreign pretenses. Who the heck knows? I think we've also seen this happen multiple times in many articles about government officials. I'm not pointing any fingers.
I am. I will.
Anyways, I know you will, but I won't.
So I mean, like the idea of a pardon is like, let's say some guy like did something bad 30 years ago, and he's really changed his life around, and he's really made some sort of amends. Say, all right, he's been in jail 30 years. Let's give him a pardon, Or if someone is convicted of doing something when it was clear they didn't do it, A great example would be the California Innocence Project, where they go and find people that have been convicted of murder and through DNA testing prove they didn't do it. That's a pardon. This asshole, Joseph Schwartz, he's evil. He hasn't done, like, there's no reason to pardon him whatsoever. He hasn't done anything good. He hasn't made any amends. He's just an evil person that stole money, not even from like a private person, from the US government, meaning you and me, and from state governments, you and me.
Well, John, we do live in a country that makes no sense. We might be in the upside down in
Well,
Stranger Things world.
that's my point, in that Joseph Schwartz is evil and he's a creep, and if you're an evil and you're a creep, you win these days. Donald Trump is evil and a creep, and I'm just doing this to underscore how whacked out Trump really is. I mean, how whack, and how you can just buy a pardon. It's grotesque. The point being is, one criticism you could level at Punk News is we're Punk News, but we don't get into politics that much. And I've been toying with this idea ever since Trump was elected again, is I might just start doing like political articles like once a week or something, and in a news fashion, like here's what Trump did or whatever. Because I really think as Punk, politics is not the only part of Punk, but it's a big part, and maybe we're dropping the ball and covering that. Punk News, I mean, the overall perspective of by the readership of Punk News is that we're kind of like, I hate to say, well, I don't hate to say, but like, fat center, like most fat bands are not that political, so that's the kind of punk that we sort of covered or traditionally have. But I think we need to go a little bit more maximum rock and roll and cover some politics. So I might start doing a little politic coverage here or there, Anyway, just wanted to highlight how horrible Trump is and how mad I am. I mean, this guy is the lowest scum of the earth. Lowest scum of the earth. And he just got a pardon for no reason. No reason. Like just 'cause just because he gave money to Trump. Like, there's no reason to pardon this guy at all. He stole money from the government and the pipe and harmed a lot of old people because he's a selfish, evil piece of shit. So it's I don't know. I'm furious about it. It sucks. Anyway, so that wraps up that story. The bad guys win. But here's a cool story. Last Friday, I saw no. I take that back. Last Saturday, I saw Patti Smith in Philadelphia on the last leg of her Horses tour, where she did all the classic 1975 album Horses all the way through. Then Lenny Kaye and the band did a mini television set, because I didn't even know that Tom Verlaine of television actually wrote a fair amount of the music in Horses. Then Patti Smith came out and did a second set of some classics and some new stuff. Then they ended with a 9-minute version of My Generation where someone gave Patti Smith the guitar and she just made noise and then she ripped the strings out of the guitar. And I forgot, I only paid like 70 bucks, quote, only like 70 bucks for a ticket. I forgot that, Sam, where do you think I was seat wise?
70 bucks. And where was the venue? What is the venue?
Oh, the Met Philadelphia. Really nice venue. Really nice venue.
Were you in the balcony or something?
Sam, I was dead center 3 rows back. I don't know how I did it.
For $70?
For 70 bones.
Is this like some Philadelphia price nonsense?
Well, no, because actually there was a time period where I could have resold it for $800, and I sort of wish I did, because 800 bucks is a fat stack, frankly.
Before
the show, it dropped down to 250. I'm like, well, I'm not going to sell for 250. I'll keep it for that. But I kind of wish I did sell for 800. But man, let me tell you, How good do you think Patti Smith was on a scale of 1 to 10?
10 out of 10.
19 out of 10. Patti Smith, she sounded so good. She was awesome. She was energetic. And of course, she did her and actually, she changed up like some of the poetry songs on Horses. She like changed it up and made it about Philadelphia and stuff. She was so insanely good. I mean, like, you know, sometimes you go, I mean, I go to a lot of concerts. And the fact of the matter is, when you go to as many concerts as I have, and when you've been to as many concerts as I have, it really takes kind of a lot to wow you. And, you know, I'll go to a show and be like, yeah, that was good. You know, but I won't be like, holy shit. Patti Smith was holy shit. She was so insanely good. And Lenny Kaye and the whole crew. And it really, I mean, I would say go see the tour, but it's over. So you missed out if you didn't go. It was absolutely amazing. Patti Smith is the queen. She rules. It was so rad. I mean, it really was amazing. She was kind of flaky like she always is. She, you know, she brought her son out and her daughter out and she's like crying, you know, and she's like, oh, I'm so happy. You know, it was amazing. Patti Smith is absolutely amazing. You should. I don't know if she's going to do the. I mean, she's 78. I don't know if she's going to do the Horses thing again. But no matter what, you should go see her. It really was an astounding show. So, Patti Smith, let's hit some news.
That sounds awesome. Yeah.
Here's some other cool news. Danzig. He's doing an all Elvis show. That's going to be December 31 and New Year's Eve in L.A. And of course, being modern Danzig, it hasn't been without a little bit of debacle. Of course, let me briefly tell my previous Danzig debacle. The first time he did Danzig Does All Elvis, which, of course, the show is a partner to his album Danzig Sings Elvis, where he does all Elvis songs. But on that album, perhaps interestingly, perhaps frustratingly, he does a bunch of Elvis songs, but he doesn't do them like Elvis did them. And he doesn't even do them like the band Danzig did them. It's kind of like him and like a piano, and that's it, singing sparse Elvis songs. So a bit of a surprising release. I think it was maybe not quite what the fans had wanted. And anyway, so when he first did it, he kind of did it at like, was it in Las Vegas or L.A.? No, I think it was L.A. It was in L.A., but it was not like a Las Vegas show where you sit down at a table and the waitress brings you drinks or whatever, and Danzig's up there up on the stage sitting in a chair. So I flew out for it, except for I didn't, because that was the weekend where like they canceled like every flight. And so I was trapped in Chicago for 3 days and it sucked ass, or 2 days maybe, whatever. So anyways, Danzig's doing it again. It's a one-night only show at the House of Blues. He's doing all Elvis. Tickets were supposed to go on sale yesterday at 1 p.m. EST, and they totally didn't. So now they say they're going to go on sale tomorrow at 1 p.m. EST. I was thinking, should I go or should I not go? And I kind of think I want to go. I'm going to see how much tickets are, and if they're even remotely reasonable, I think I'm going to spend New Year's Eve out in Vegas. And do you think this is interesting, or do you think you'd rather just hear a Danzig show? And what kind of so-and-so covers so-and-so show would you like to see?
Ooh, okay. I think this is going to be cool because he has the album for it. I think it fits Vegas and it fits kind of like a New Year's Eve thing. Like, I think they're going to do, I'm picturing like a lounge. Everything's very like plush. And where else is like the best spot for Vegas than Elvis? There's so many Elvi around.
Well, to
And I
be fair,
think,
it's in the show's in L.A., not Vegas.
ah.
See, the
How did I
Elvis,
get that mixed up?
well, because the Elvis show that he's paying
Damn.
homage to in his own show
There we go.
is an homage to the famous Elvis in Vegas show.
Well, I think it's going to be cool. I think it's going to have the same sort of vibe, but not in Vegas, in LA. Much less a competition for Elvis. So I think it's going to be cool. I hope it happens. And there's no delays or anything. For who I'd like to see do a cover set, that's really interesting. I have to think about that. There's a few that I think would be really cool. Do you have an answer to that, Sam?
Not really, because I would love to see punk people do like pop boy bands, but no one wants to hear that from me. That's just a general nonsense that Sam would say type of thing. Because I generally do love a surprising pop song, boy band pop song appear out of nowhere. I did this year actually see this band. Oh my God, what are they called again? I'm like, oh my God, Sleep Theory. Yeah, so this band Sleep Theory, they're on, I believe, Epitaph. I saw them on tour and they covered an NSYNC song and I lost my mind. Like screaming. I'm sorry to any of the t really tall d guys like around me that are strangers with a crazy little Asian in the back screaming every lyric of Bye 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 in your face because I don't care. Maybe sorry, not sorry, but generally that's my vibe, type of thing. Yeah, John, I think you should go. I think you should make ring in the new year with dancing, seeing Elvis, in your face, maybe with, a little tiny table next to you and drinks served to your lap. I don't know. This seems like a thing that you would do and
Yeah,
enjoy it.
it sounds pretty fun. The question is, when I kind of looked this up, it kind of shocked me, frankly. Danzig Sings Elvis came out about 6 years ago, but the last Danzig album, which I would have guessed came out like 5 years ago, came out almost 9 years ago, which is crazy.
Oh,
So, like, I thought Black Lady and Crown
wow.
came out like 4 years ago. No, 9 years ago is when Black Lady and Crown came out. And Danzig's cover album came out almost 11 years ago. And the album before that, 20, no. 16 years ago. And the album before that, 22 years ago. So anyways, he hasn't been super prolific lately. So are we at the end? Danzig's been doing a bunch of Misfits shows. I believe Doyle hinted at Misfits shows next year. That being said, are we about at the end of the Danzig arc, if you will? What do you guys think?
Think so. I you can always be dancing when you feel like it, when you don't want to be in Misfits, right? I was like, it's a thing. I think you just could do multiple things at the same time. You just have to learn how to calendar and schedule it or get a manager to do it for you.
And
Yeah, I agree. Sorry.
I was going to say, do you think we're at the end of the Danzig adventure?
I don't think so. I think there's going to be a couple more chapters in the Danzig adventure. I think it's just kind of, he just needs to shift his focus back to the music part.
Well, I hope I'm wrong, but I think we kind of are at the end of the Danzig chapter. He's talked about a lot how records don't make nearly as much money as they used to, which is true, but it's still nice when they come out. But I think he's got that mindset. He was making movies for a little while, but that seems to have petered out. And so I think, and I mean, listen, he's no spring chicken. I mean, he's a man. And actually, when I saw him 2 summers ago, he sounded the best I've ever heard him when he did All Danzig 1. It was astoundingly good. He is 70 years old. That's not super old, but it's not super young either. So I don't think we're ever going to get another Danzig album. I don't think we're going to get a Misfits album. And I kind of don't want a Misfits album unless it's like the best thing ever. And so I think we're going to get maybe a few short tours here or there. I think that's going to be about it. So we'll see, man. At any rate, so this might be a cool thing to fly out and see. Now let's see here. Oh! So this isn't punk at all, but we talked about it briefly at Punk News, and I just thought it was interesting from a what's the word I'm looking for? From a academic perspective, I guess. 50 Cent, Puff Daddy's rival, has released his long in the works documentary about Puff Daddy. It's called Sean Combs, The Reckoning, and it's out via Netflix. And of course, the listeners might know that 50 Cent and Puff Daddy have hated each other pretty much since the get-go. And 50 Cent is, of course, a master troller, but not only a troller, but like psychological warfare kind of guy. Like when he was beefing with Ja Rule, I think it was Ja Rule, I'm pretty sure it was Ja Rule. Ja Rule had some big concert at Madison Square Garden. So 50 Cent like bought like the entire front section for himself. That way, when Ja Rule performed, it was like an empty area right out in front of him to kind of throw him off his game, you know?
Oh my gosh.
I remember when he was beefing with Fat Joe, he put out a mixtape called Elephant in the Sand, which body shaming is not cool, but it just 50 Cent just body shaming Fat Joe for like 35. Oh, no, I remember this was hardcore about that. He does body shame Fat Joe a lot, but at the beginning of the mixtape, it's called Elephant in the Sand Mixtape, and it's one of 50 Cent's best mixtapes. At the beginning, it's Fat Joe saying, the guy that shot 50 Cent, 50 Cent says he's a gangster, but the guy that shot 50 Cent, he's still walking around. Everybody knows who he is, you know, but 50 Cent says he's a gangster. How come the guy that shot him is still alive, still walking around? At the end of the mixtape is a news report of that person in question being murdered. Which is whoa, you know, whoa, you know. And so this is kind of 50 Cent, the Puff Daddy thing. Puff Daddy is definitely 50 Cent's biggest rival. And the fact of the matter is, Puff Daddy's probably sold way more records than 50 Cent. I think 50 Cent's a better rapper, although like 50 Cent is so good at trolling and dissing. I wish I was more of a fan of his music, but when I listen to his music, it's just okay. But the point being is, this is 50 Cent, kind of kicking his arch rival when his arch rival is on the ropes. And of course, 50 Cent's, some of the information in this documentary was actually, before the documentary was released, was actually influential in the conviction of Puff Daddy, who was convicted for, let me give the exact crimes that he was convicted for. Let's see here. So here's the question. And Em and I talked about this about 2 years ago or a year ago when this documentary kind of first popped up. Is 50 Cent directly helped sexual abuse victims through his research and private detective work that he hired and his documentary? But I don't know that he did it out of any concern for the victims. He did it out of a sense of vengeance and glee. So the question is, M, how do we handle the documentary and how do we handle 50 Cent and his motives for nailing Puffy to the ground? Unless maybe we really do feel that 50 Cent hated Puffy because he was a sex creep, you know, the whole time.
I haven't watched the documentary yet, but I do have a feeling that he hated him partly because of the sex creep thing. Like, I think there's a fair amount of like re revenge based in this, but I think it's also the if I can do this, take this guy down who I know has been hurting people and help the people who he's hurt, then yeah, I'm gonna do that. Like, it's the best of everything kind of thing. So that's what I think with the motives and kind of how everything played out. I think it's great that he, made this documentary and got all of this stuff and, is integral in getting him convicted and, speaking out about these things. I think it's great and it's really good to see. It's one of the, like, I'm interested in what the documentary is gonna be like too, but it's
Apparently, it's pretty crazy. People have said there's some
yeah.
actually really crazy stuff in it.
That's the thing. Have to make sure, have some time to watch and decompress, but yeah. I think it's great that he did it.
I think the entire story is crazy to begin with because, growing up, like listening to Puffy and like knowing who Puffy is because, like, literally, Puffy was like really, really, really popular when I was like 12. And I went to school in Brooklyn and like Canarsie, Brooklyn. So it's like a popular thing. And he's always had such a like a very clean image, So 50 Cent actually said that according about Puffy's parties that it's just uncomfortable energy connected to it and that he has been staying out of those parties because it's uncomfortable, which kind of tells me I was like, you kind of knew that there was something strange happening there, eh? That you stayed away from it. So it's kind of like, did you know that shiesty things was happening and you were just like, I'm not getting involved because I have morals? Or I'm not going to any of those parties because he's gonna get caught one day and I want nothing to do with it. So there's kind of like that going on in my head about him. I do think that 50 Cent like does have the, hey, this doesn't seem right, so I want no part of it thing. Right? Because Puffy did seem like he kept his group of trusted people very close. But I think as like, when he was younger and it seems like it's kind of spiraled out of control as he's aged and these freak off parties just got even crazier. I don't know. I haven't watched the documentary yet. I'm going to watch the documentary eventually. I cannot understand how people have time to binge watch the documentary already. I think it's only been out like, what, a day or two?
Yeah, it
So
came out yesterday.
that is crazy when something comes out and it's like 8 hours and the person's like, oh my God, it was incredible. It's like, did you just like stay home from work or something? And just like watch?
Hours long, it's gonna take me like 2 weeks to like finish. I'm like, I don't have like all the time in the world, especially if it's like crazy. Because if it's like crazy stuff, sometimes you need to like rewind that and be like, wait, did I hear that properly? I did like look at like some of the listings of the people that they like got interviewed, and I was like, oh, damn. They literally like tried to get as many people as they possibly can to like talk about this, including a cousin of Tupac. Like
Oh my
I'm like,
gosh.
damn. This entire case is crazy. I cannot even understand like the brevity of it. Because it's a lot. I'm kind of glad, like, if like he's locked up right now.
I just love, I mean, really, like I said, I like some 50 Cent songs. I wish I liked them more, but I do love how 50 Cent is really the last true gangster rapper in that, like, he's a guy from the streets. He has a street mentalities, but he's parlayed that into a large fortune twice because he filed for bankruptcy once after he got sued. And then he bought vitamin water and made it all back in like a year, which is cool. And but I like how he has it. I like, a lot of people, oh, I don't like this guy, blah, blah, they bitch or whatever. Whereas 50 Cent sees his enemy and then takes them out, or when they're on the ropes, goes in for the kill with something like this, you know? So I mean, I think 50 Cent is cool, man. And I think it's cool that he purposely chose a woman director for the film, which I thought was a smart move too, you know? So yeah, man, 50's dangerous, man. Do not mess with 50. So, and here's the last question with regards to this, Em and Sam. Should we cover the stuff like this on Punk News, or is this just a John G vanity piece?
I just think this is a John G vanity piece, but it's a quite interesting vanity piece because it's like it's wild. This piece is wild,
It
John.
is wild. So anyways, so 50 man, he's cool. So anyways, here's another story. Flatliners have signed to Equal Vision Records. They've released a song called Misanthropy and Me, and of course there's probably going to be the album that follows it. They're playing War on Christmas with the Lawrence Arms on December 6th, which is this Friday in Chi-Town. Sam, you going to that?
No, I'm not going to Chicago. I wish.
Have you ever been to a Warren a Christmas show?
No, I have not. It is very difficult for Sam to leave New York anytime in December, especially now since like the weather is so awful and lately flights just don't like going anywhere. Yeah, because when I went to Vegas for Best Friends Day, I was worried that I was even going to get to Vegas, and I definitely had an issue, almost an issue coming back, because there was a nor'easter and a government shutdown. So,
Oof. Ooh.
yeah, so Sam's not going to Chicago this weekend. I would love to go see the Lawrence Arms at any time of my days, living days on this earth. But, and I do think, like, the Lawrence Arms don't play often. And I do love the fact that they're like making it a thing, like, we're having a Christmas show. I really love Christmas shows, you guys. I love Christmas so much. But it does get a tad bit overwhelming when everyone has a Christmas show. And it's c kind of like the Bouncing Souls doesn't have a Christmas show anymore, which does make me really, really sad still, but.
See, well, see, the ba two things there is the Bouncing Souls used to have a Christmas show like the day after Christmas, right?
It's the day after Christmas and the days following. So it'll be like 3 days in a row, 4 days in a row, depending. But it's always after Christmas, which is nice because a lot of like people might be home for the holidays, hence why it's called Home for the Holidays.
Oh, and actually, I'll tell my Danzig story real quick about that because I'll leave with Danzig at any conversation. But see, for me as a band, that's a lot of stress around Christmas time, one of the busiest times of year. You know, like you know, that. So I always thought that was kind of. I think that's why they changed it to the summer. What's it
Stoked,
called?
yeah, stoked for the summer. Well, I think so. Recently, the Bouncing Souls actually put out a song, for home, like it's for home for holidays, and it's pretty much a song about home for holidays. And when I heard the song, I was like bawling because it meant everything to me because home for the holidays meant everything to me. It was just like the total encapsulation of that. I would have to say, like, I do love when, like, punk bands do, like, very Christmas-oriented or holiday-oriented songs. NextGarz just did a cover of Bryan Adams's, like, holiday song, that came out today. So I'm like, yay. But yeah, like, a lot of bands do, like, holiday things, and it's, like, it does get quite overwhelming, especially since, like, as a human that does do Christmas, I'm also coordinating my own holiday things, buying gifts for the people that I semi-like or love. Like, things like that. I
See,
don't know.
I don't know if I want to go to a show like the day after Christmas or even a couple like I kind of just want to relax and chill out, you know.
Well, technically, you might be going to a show for New Year's, which is also another crazy thing.
True.
Well, I think yeah, like it depends because like some people don't celebrate Christmas, right? So they might do the Christmas in a Chinese food restaurant type of thing, or but yeah, no, like generally ho the holidays is stressful. We all have our reasons why we need to run from family after the holidays, so that's also a reason to go do something. Yeah, like, well, this show is actually before the holidays. It's December 6th, so technically I guess you're coordinating your life to be in Chicago, but you know, I do see people flying to go to these things. I think a couple years ago I was like really contemplating going, but I was just like, no, I'm not making a trip to Chicago when it's like freezing out and pipes are bursting because no one left it on leak or whatever. Yes, that happens. Apparently, if you don't let your faucet drip, it might like the pipes might burst. Weird. Yeah, but when I saw the Flatliners get announced to that, I was like, that's interesting because the Flatliners really haven't done a lot recently. And I guess they were working on something and just, you know, didn't say a peep about it. I did listen to the song that they released, and I wasn't super wowed yet. I think I need to like listen to more. But then again, the last album that they put out, I wasn't like super wowed about it. Although I do love the Flatliners, though. But yeah. Wait, M, do you like the Flatliners?
I do like the Flatliners. Yeah, they're one of my org core bands.
You have one?
Like Lawrence Arms too.
Yes.
I have a couple, but Flatliners are good. I was kind of surprised about like the signing. I don't know why, it just kind of was, and I thought the song was good. Like again, I agree with you. Like it's decent. It's nothing like, the socks are still on, but like it was good. It was fun.
Your Christmas socks is on.
Yeah. Yeah, they have little antlers and they light up,
Yeah. Well, I think the signing I was talking to a friend about this like literally today, and I think the signing is going to be what it is only because the Flatliners really have been a fat band forever, except for the last album that they put out. So I think we might be seeing this wave of fat bands seeking out other places to go because fat no longer exists, type of thing,
Oh,
which
that's
I think
true,
is
yeah.
really interesting because now, like, where does all of these bands fit is the question, you know? And how, like, and what are these labels doing? Because Equal Vision isn't historically like, you know, I guess a org core label, you know? So is Equal Vision going to start taking up more org core bands? Like, you know, or is other like, you know, like at some point Rise did do that. Rise did take like the Bouncing Souls and Hot Water Music and stuff like that. So like Rise did have a sect of that, the org core stuff there, but what is happening here? So I think this is the start of that, seeing these bands go elsewhere, which to me kind of goes, so if you're kind of like, because fat is now no longer, right? These bands, these historical fat bands, could have gone to, who is it? Hopeless?
Hopeless.
Yeah, could have gone to Hopeless if they wanted to. What was the offer that Hopeless gave these bands for this album? That's my question. I don't know. This is just Sam surmising things because, you know, apparently record industry things happen. It's totally plausible that Flatliners just said, I don't want to deal with it. Let's just go find somewhere else. But, you know, it seems like a good fit. The other thing is, Chris Cresswell is in Hot Water Music now, right? And I'm pretty sure Hot Water Music's been working with Equal Vision for the last album. So that's also a possible transition why that went that way. Yeah, I don't know. This is just Sam summizing things.
I didn't think about the Fat Records angle. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, well, I think we'll find out more as time goes on and some of these fat bands start looking into things. Like, when John did that lovely article, interview article thing that John did about fat
Oh,
a few months ago, they only really said that they were releasing a NOFX album. Bad Cop, Bad Cop was going to Hopeless for the one album that we know of, and they were doing a strung out, like, was it a re-release? Yeah, I think so. Strung out something. So it was kind of like, okay, well, that was the package, the first wave of package things, right? So it's kind of like, okay, what does this mean? I think a lot of us said that. What does this mean? But no one really knows what does this mean. So we just have to let time tell us what does this mean. I think so far we haven't seen 10 million NOFX reissues yet, right? So that's a good sign.
I frankly, I'm sort of surprised that there hasn't been a wave of out of print fat stuff, frankly.
Well, I think Fat did a good job before everything was announced and done to do a huge wave of like, we're gonna repress this, we're gonna repress this. Because they did the 25th anniversary variants and stuff like that. So yeah, there's only a handful of things that my husband is like was banking that Fat was going to repress and they didn't. There's only a handful. I think he could count on his one hand how many that he was waiting for. So, but everything else, like, there was a repress done within the last 5 years. So I think they did a good job. So it's probably gonna be a little bit until like Hopeless is like, oh, okay, we're gonna press this, or we're gonna press this. Because I'm sure if you go on Discogs, you'll see that some variants are completely saturated on Discogs.
Well said. Here's my quick Danzig story about Christmas. December 26, 2006, my friend and I went out to Sayersville, New Jersey, to the Starland Ballroom, worst venue in the United States, to see Danzig. And it was absolutely way oversold, way overpacked, and so we're squeezed there, and I felt someone like really smack into my back, and so I like ran my elbow back, and like it was literally so packed that if you had to go to the bathroom, you couldn't. You're not going anywhere, And so I feel like there's like I smacked the back, so I like ran my elbow behind me, and my friend and I turn around, and it's like three huge security guards wrestling with an even bigger roided out dude, and he looks right at us, and this dude was, I don't know, 6 foot 6, roided out, and like I don't think my friend and I would have been able to handle it. So anyways, so
Wait,
Danzig,
John, where
oh my
was this
God.
brawl? Was it in the center of the pit?
No, actually, if you're looking at the stage, it was the first raised section to the left.
Because Starlin is weird because there's several levels.
Yes. Starland
Okay.
sucks. I mean, it sucks that it's the middle of nowhere. It sucks that they charge you for parking, even though it's in the middle of nowhere. And it sucks in that like they really don't know how to run a show. I've seen many, well, not many, but multiple kind of weird ass organized shows, even though the actual venue itself is okay, But anyways, so Danzig did a Danzig set, then he did a Misfit set with Doyle, then he did some more Danzig stuff, then he did an encore where he did a Danzig song, a Samhain song, and then he closed with Die Die with Doyle. It was an amazing, amazing show. Sam and M, guess who opened the show? Weirdest opening ever for Danzig, probably.
Patti Smith.
Well, that's pretty weird, but it was not Patti Smith.
Okay.
Weird Al.
Also a good guess, but no. The opener was Gorgeous Frankenstein, the precursor band to the Doyle, the band. So it was Doyle, his
Oh.
wife, and that guy Alex Wolfman or whatever, and Dr. Chud on drums. But halfway through the show, Alex Wolfman or whatever his name is, left the stage. And who came out and did a mini set? Michael Graves did a new Misfits set at the Danzig show, which
Holy.
was weird. I mean, like it was weird even then. You know, it's like, oh, I feel like Danzig like hated that. And it just goes to show that I think in their mind, people have an idea of what the sides and the battle is over in the battle for the Misfits between Danzig and Jerry Only and some of the other guys. They're wrong in that the sides aren't what people think they might be, and the battle isn't over necessarily what they think it might be over. Like, because I actually interviewed Doyle a little while after. I'm like, that was kind of weird. Like, was Danzig mad about that? And like, Doyle was like, no, he didn't care at all. You know what I mean? Which shocked me. And I wonder, is that because Danzig, I'm Danzig. Like, it doesn't matter who covered for me, I'm Danzig. Or did he not really have any ill will towards Michael Graves? He had just had ill will towards Jerry Only at the time. So Michael Graves had nothing to do with it, you know? Totally weird. And that was also before Michael Graves was a Proud Boy, so it was okay to listen to it then. Why do you two think there was a Danzig show? It was a one-off Danzig show. No other shows on the East Coast. So why is there a one-off Danzig show on December 26th in Central Jersey or Northern Jersey?
They were home for the holidays.
He was home to visit his mom. I'm only, I would bet $10,000 that Danzig was home to visit his mom, and he said, "I'll do a show
Okay.
afterwards." You know,
Yep. Make it worth your while and make some money out of it.
so it was a rad show, even though Sayreville Ballroom sucks. Okay, let's see what else we got to cover. Oh, Homefront, the new album's out. Everybody loves it. The new album is called "Watch It Die." They released a song, "Between the Waves." It sounds very much. Watch y'all let M kick this off. M, the new Homefront album. Do you dig it? The new song, "Between the Waves." Do you dig it?
I was really looking forward to the Homefront album, and to be completely honest, I have not been wowed. I have given it just one listen. So I'm going to listen to it again. I'm going to give it another shake, but I was not wowed. I liked the singles. I thought the singles were good, but I don't know. There's just something about the album that's just not clicking right now. So, yes, Between the Waves was I believe the final single from Watch It Die, and they released something that was billed as a visualizer video, and it shows the flower that's on the cover kind of wilting and like different things. So it's kind of fun. It's kind of interesting. It goes with the song, and obviously it goes with like the name of the album and sort of like themes they're exploring on it. But yeah, just kind of surprised. I'm gonna listen to it another go and give it another shake. But where do you guys stand on the new home front?
So I do love Homefront. Homefront is great. However, I need more time with Watch It Die, being that it just came out. I also hate the fact that there's so many freaking albums that came out in the fall when you're trying to do end of the year lists and throwing wrenches left and right. So thank you all of you guys for not putting everything in the spring or summer. Thank you. Anyways, yes, that's Sam Sass for like the five like past 5 minutes. Yeah, I think I need more time with it. There is sparkles in this album. Yes, like, there's certain, yes, some of the singles they released were like fantastic. But I do need to like spend more time like listening to the other tracks. My husband has it in the car all the time. And I haven't even discussed with him what he feels about this. I totally love Think of the Lie. So that's where I am with that. And Game of Power is amazing. So it's also plausible I had very high hopes for Watch It Die because I love
Yeah.
the other two so much. So that's also plausible. I don't know. I also guys come back out east because every single time you've been out east, I've missed you. So come, please come back. I'm trying to see you again. I've only seen them once. Very, very sad. Yeah.
You're bro
Anyways.
you're both insane. You are both insane. This record's awesome. Like, I could not believe, well, I could believe, but I was really blown away by this record. To me, it's everything that I wanted out of the new Homefront album. It's a little bit more 80s than the other two, even though the 80s definitely had an 80s influence. Also, where the previous record had a New Order influence, this is very much a Tears for Fears or Frankie Goes Hollywood influence, which I can't stand either of those bands, but I love Homefront doing it. I thought the 80s influence was tasteful, well done, and kind of elevates that genre, especially that it's got a little bit more of a punk thwomp on the Homefront side of things. I thought this record was absolutely fantastic. I will concede that it doesn't quite have a monster single like Nation of the previous album. That being said, overall, I think its album is extremely albumy, and I think it's clever, awesome, and I listened to it a whole bunch. And frankly, as much as M. Moore loves to talk about how great Canadian bands are, I'm surprised that M. Moore doesn't love this record. Sam, I'm surprised that you don't love
Because
this record.
there's, well,
Oh, wait, you're gonna
again,
say M. Moore, you're gonna say? I'm sorry.
because there's been so many like amazing Canadian albums this year, you know,
This
too.
one
So
beats
it's
them
just
all.
like you're compare, pardon?
There's no other Canadian album that's better than this one this
Oh
year.
yeah, there is
Who?
several.
You will see it in her end of the year list soon.
And I'm not saying this is a bad album. It's like, again, it's just taken a minute to settle in. But yeah, like
Well, she might change her mind in a
slash.
week. I
Was she have to say, Sam, are you shocked that M didn't like this? I would have thought that M would say, like, this is the greatest thing ever. I'm shocked that M doesn't love this. I'm
I'm not
shocked.
shocked only because like M listens to so many things, and M is so like into like young stuff sometimes
Well,
that
Homefront's young.
I know they're young, but there's like it's also like. So this album to me is kind of quite gothy, quite like had tinge of like The Cure in it for me. Which like I do love, but I was like again, I was like things are happening so quickly, especially with like records coming out in the last 2 months. And I'm like life like I don't know about you guys, but I clearly don't have time all the time to be listening to music all the time. Yes, this is coming from a writer of punk news, so take away my punk points if you want. But anyways, yeah, like it's a lot. It is a lot. I don't know why everyone decided to like put an album out this year. Guys, can you guys tell me, like, you know, write at us at punk news and tell us why you put it out an album this year? Because it's getting a little overwhelming for some of us.
Well, you can always use the podcast at punknews.org. I think this record is great. I'm surprised that actually, like, I thought this record was going to explode the internet. I thought there was going to be reviews all over, interviews all over. I feel like Punk News is kind of the only site making a huge deal out of this record. Like, I feel like other publications aren't really covering it all, and I haven't seen really any other interviews. And
Well, I think it's also the
yeah.
fact that it came out on La Vida Es Un Music Discos.
Indeed, indeed,
Like
indeed.
that record label isn't here. It's in the UK, I believe, yeah. Or
Yes.
some yeah.
England, yeah.
So, yeah, so basically like, you know, it's not hitting the same like, you know, pu publicist circuit that would have like
Well,
happen.
actually, Sam, I'm going to contradict you. It is hitting the main publicist circuit for this type of thing, but I feel maybe the pups is overshot. I'll just put all cards on the table. I love Homefront. I say, can we interview Homefront? And the pups was like, oh, they're a little busy right now, you know? So, like,
What does that mean?
here's exactly what it means. It means the pups is determined that Punk News is too dorky to cover this very cool band. So they don't want the Punk News stink on them. And that's what it means, which I understand that from a strategy standpoint, but I feel it didn't work strategy wise in that, like, this record did not get that much coverage, and I really wish it did because it's an awesome record. The other thing, Sam, that you mentioned, I think is very on point, is that La Vida Es Un Mus is a very, very, quote, cool record label. Very cool. Too
Yes.
cool. And they put out
Yes.
records, and they don't, like, you know, when Fat Records, just use Fat Records as an example. When Fat Records puts out a record, they're like, we've got the new Lagwagon record coming out. Check out the new Lagwagon. Lagwagon in 6 weeks. Lagwagon in 4 weeks. Lagwagon in 2 weeks. Get ready for Lagwagon. You know, whereas La Vida, this music's like, we're putting out a record in 2 months. And then it comes out in 2 months, and that's it. You know what I mean? Like I don't feel they're doing a favor to any band by doing that. And I feel this record maybe should have come out on kind of a bigger label or a less cool label, but label with a bit more firepower. Like, I don't know if they courted Epitaph or not, but this would have been perfect for Epitaph. You know what I mean? Because like this has this record specifically, this record definitely could appeal to the young, cool people, the college kids. They would love this record. They would love this record. I know that because I sell records like this that aren't like this to college age kids every month. You know what I
Well,
mean?
even like if Pirates Press Records was still like
Well,
super active, this would probably fit in the bill, like with Cock Sparrows and stuff like that.
actually, that's a great point, Sam. In that's a great point. In that, you actually could have played this two ways. You could have played it as the co cool college kid crowd. You know what I mean? With they like, turns out all those bands, or you could play it with the working class punk, Coxbar crowd. Either way, it would have been a smash. But instead, they played it to the maximum rock and roll crowd, which I think no maximum rock and roll band ever rises above their initial buzz, ever. You know what I mean? Ever. There's always this huge buzz and then it dies out. And I don't want to put the I don't want to put the Epitaph on turn on home front because maybe it'll be kind of a surprisingly slow burn, like or no, a surprisingly quiet burn, like Amon the Sniffers. Like Amon the Sniffers is big now. But it didn't just happen. Like one day we all just turned around and Amos and the Sniffers was huge. There was that initial record, the first record, whether the EPs where there was initial buzz, they put out the record which hit, and they were like, everyone's like, oh yeah, Amos and the Sniffers. And then I turned around and Amos and the Sniffers went from playing 500 capacity clubs to 5,000 capacity clubs, you know? So hopefully that will help ha happen with Homefront. I'm just saying is I'm surprised at the lack of coverage and lack of buzz surrounding this new album. Because I think it is absolutely fantastic and is definitely in contender for a very high spot on my end of the year list. I thought this record is amazing. Amazing.
So, John, is it the top 10? Are
Oh,
you
yeah.
hinting?
Is it?
You're hinting.
I would say almost definitely top 10, but you never know because I
Ooh.
think it was last year, the year before, I had something that was on like top, that was like top 16, and then I forgot about Judas Priest and it totally knocked him off,
Oh.
knocked him off the thing. So we'll see. I think this record's great. I'm down to interview you guys anytime if the publicists change their mind, you know. But I'm not gonna ask a second time. You know, if they come begging to me, I'll be like, all right, I'll do you a favor,
Are
you
you
know.
not asking now?
We asked, I'll be frank, we asked for, and I should stop bitching about this because like I said, we asked Penny Rimbaud to be on Punky's Podcast 700. He said, yeah. We asked the Melvins. They said, yeah. We asked Red Cross. They said, yeah. We asked Bratmobile. They said, yes. You know, we asked Coat Hangers. They said, yes. All these awesome people said, yes. So why am I dwelling on the one band that said no? And it wasn't the band. It was the publicist who said, oh, they're too busy to do a 10-minute interview, which really annoyed me, Sam. It really annoyed me. And I shouldn't air dirty laundry on the podcast. I said I wasn't going to do anymore, but I was really annoyed by this because I love this band. I love this record. And it'd be one thing if this record was all over the internet everywhere. And I would say, well, the publicist made the right call. But I just didn't. I didn't see the big bang, Sam. I didn't see the big bang. So I'm hoping it'll be a quiet burn, a la Amon the Sniffers, and we'll just turn around and they'll be huge.
We hope so, Jadon. We really do.
Let's see what else we have. So well, here's another guy that we tried to interview once. It didn't work out. Morrissey. We're not gonna honestly. There are three things that I talk about way too much on the Punk News podcast, and I promise I'm gonna try to curb it to a degree. Punk rock bowling, which will be easy not to talk about this year.
Oh.
Danzig and Morrissey. I'm going to try not to talk about them as much on the podcast, but there's always interesting developments going on with those crew. I'm always going to talk about the Melvins, so deal with it, and the Dwarfs, so deal with it. So anyway, Morrissey just announced a pretty significant European tour, almost a month long. There's a lot of it's actually a continuous month long tour, but he takes off pretty much a few days between every stop, you know. So he's gone all the way from Denmark to España and everywhere in between. But what's weird is this literally was announced like a week after he canceled an entire South American tour. And what's going on? And do you care? Maybe you don't care. Like is the Morrissey shine faded away totally.
I think it's every time he announces a tour now, it's is it gonna happen? You know, like is he actually gonna show up? Are the shows going to go ahead as scheduled? Are they going to be canceled last minute? Like, is he up for doing a tour? Like, is he okay? What's going on with him? Why have there been so many cancellations? You know, all this kind of stuff. So I think it's interesting because we don't know what's going to happen. We have a fair idea of what's going to happen. I think the most shocking thing would be the inner or the tour going off without a hitch. I think the tour poster is hilarious though,
Yes.
because he's just like, "Whoa, look at all these dates," and it's just really funny.
Even his mind is blown about the dates,
Yeah.
okay? Like you cannot de deny him dates now. Oh my God.
Sam, what are your thoughts?
Oh, go ahead, Danielle.
So Sam has a weird okay, so last year Sam was in Europe, in February, running around France and Belgium, and apparently Morrissey was touring. That like the next that summer in Europe, and I kept on running into Morrissey flyers. Like all over buildings, like on the side of buildings, I just see the Morrissey. Oh, Morrissey's coming to town, and I'm like looking at it, pointing at it, and going, "Canceled, canceled!" Everywhere I went in Europe last year. So I'm also going to be in Europe again. Actually, when Morrissey's supposed to be in Europe, so we'll be in Europe together. I'm probably gonna see flyers of him, and I'm probably gonna do the same thing, where Sam goes and takes a picture of Sam saying canceled to Morrissey's flyer in face. And if it's this flyer, I'm gonna have a great time doing it. I'm just saying. I'm not sure if this is ever going to happen, because he seems like if this happens, 25% of the shows is gonna happen. I don't think all of them are. It just seems like that's the normal Morrissey track record, right? Of what happens, I'm just gonna cancel for whatever reasons. I kind of feel like with him, I think he should just be upfront about things because this is kind of like getting a little crazy, like, you know, fans running to try to get tickets and then like being like, oh, it's not happening, or fans just not getting tickets because they're like me, it's not happening, or trying, or if it does happen, getting them last minute. So, which can theoretically play a part in this because if like it looks like he's playing giant halls, London is the O2 or 02, and I'm pretty sure that's a big place or a bigger place. So if that's the case, then if people are like, oh, I'll just grab it last minute and ticket sales don't look promising, he might just cancel because ticket sales don't look promising. And he's like, why am I going to make the trip if like I can't even sell out 50% of these venues? You know?
Numerous
Plausible.
European Morrissey shows already sold out, FYI.
Oh, okay.
Well, if that's the
Interesting.
case, then I honestly would love for him to be honest why he's canceling things.
Well, that's the
Like,
question. Is it is,
yeah.
like Em and I kind of talked about this before, and I think both Em and I, and Em, don't let me co-sign you. There's a
Oh.
significant chance of it being a mental health issue. And remember, he did that really wacky thing not that long ago.
Right.
He tried to sell his rights to the Smiths on Facebook,
Oh, yes.
like your whacked out
Yeah.
uncle trying to sell his lawnmower or something. Then he canceled his entire South American tour without even saying it. The promoter had to do it. Then, literally, not even a week after canceling an entire tour, he announces a whole other tour, you know.
Well, it's
And
also plausible that his press people is pushing for something, or his like the people behind, him as a performer is doing these things, and then they're just like maybe not paying attention to the fact that he's having a mental health issue. That's also plausible, right?
See,
Also the photo is just like, come on, why would you make this your photo for this flyer?
well, Morsi loves the troll or quiet troll. He really does. You know, like when he sold like signed David Bowie records signed by him, you know, which I thought was the best thing ever. You know, he canceled the South American tour because he said of exhaustion, which usually means one thing, but doesn't always mean one thing, you know. Peter Murphy canceled a whole bunch of shows because of exhaustion. But then why would you announce a show literally like a week after you canceled tour for exhaustion? So I don't know, man. Like, I've seen him live now. Was it four or five times? I've seen him live one, two, three, four times, five times. And every time was awesome. He's always amazing live. I'm glad he's not saying whacked out shit lately, like he was about 7 years ago. So yeah, man. So, anyways. M, solve this problem. How do we solve the problem of Morrissey? What's your take?
I think you should sit down and do a heart-to-heart interview with him.
I would do it. The only time he's really done an interview in the past like 10 years was on his own website where he controlled the questions. I would
Ooh.
actually, Morrissey would be probably top three interviews for me right now. Danzig, Morrissey, Mick Jagger, probably. Think of anybody
Oh,
else. You know,
nice.
those three, or the Death in June guy, but I'm not going to jump through the hoops, you know, that they want me to jump through. So, you know, those I would pick any of those, and really, but like with all those interviews, where I do them though, I'd make it clear like this isn't, you know, it's not going to be a hit piece, but we're going to ask some tough questions, you know. With Danzig specifically, he doesn't do a whole lot of interviews because people forget like. Journalists were like really shitty in the late 80s and early 90s, and they would like insult him in an interview with him. The way to get to Danzig, and probably Morrissey too, you got to loosen him up. You compliment him on very specific things that shows that you know about his music. You hit him with three compliments in a row. Then you get to the uncomfortable stuff asked in a nice way. That's how you interview those guys. So
Wait, hold
yeah.
on. Is there a cross behind his head?
There
There is
is.
a cross behind
Oh
his
my
head.
God. This poster just gets more and more interesting as I stare at it.
It's almost like that Peter Murphy poster where he's like, or remember
Oh
he's got the
yeah.
weird shirt on and was like,
Yes,
what is
yes. Yes.
that photo?
I'm like looking for ghosts behind him now. Like I'm just looking for things.
Well, Morrissey, he's a complicated and somewhat problematic figure, but I'm still a fan. I'm still a fan.
I looked at the comments on Instagram for this. A lot of them are in Spanish.
Of
There
course.
are disgruntled Latin American fans who are posting just recipes too,
But,
so
and well, that's the thing is, where's Morrissey's biggest market in the world?
Latin America?
Yes, he's massive in Latin America. Massive. You know, so I don't know. Let's hit one other story. There's this group called the Local Offenders, and they've released an album called Oi the Satire. And it, along the lines of Kicker and Hard Skin, it's kind of like a funny Oi album. And if you're involved in the Oi Reddit world, which I'm not really, but I've you know, dipped my toe in, this is kind of making a smash over there. What do you guys think of Oi the Satire? And how come we've never heard of this band before?
This is amazing, by the way. Like, I'm not into Oi, but the fact that like these songs are Oi songs, but if you read the lyrics, they're like so good and almost contemporary in ways, right? I was reading She's One of the Boys, but not really.
Yeah.
And I was dying because I'm like, do you know how many times I've been at a show, my husband would leave me, and then like someone would come and try to talk to me, like, what are you doing here? And I'm like, I'm a effing punk. Why are you asking me these questions?
Damn, that's the
I
best response I've
like
ever heard to a
the
question ever. See, I'm a fucking punk, you asshole.
band. Yeah, like I'm serious. Well, it's also a very New York thing to say, right? But I was like, honestly, I'm like, I've been going to shows since I was eight, like 15 years old. I'm like, why do I have to look apart, like explain myself and why I'm here? I can't I just like scream lyrics into like a, the ether because I know the lyrics and then like, you know, have someone judge me? No. Yeah. Amazing. Amazing. I need more of this. I think we haven't heard of this band because they're apparently mysterious. Who are these people? Do they actually live in London? No. I who knows? Maybe, maybe not. I don't know. Watch them be like some like weirdos living somewhere in the US making this. Hopefully this is not AI. If this is AI, I'm gonna be really mad, you guys.
Wait,
Yeah.
do they have an Instagram account?
No.
Oh, they
They have
don't. Okay.
nothing. It's just a band camp.
I really like the rundown there on vocals, whoever's sober, guitar, someone's cousin, bass, the only reliable one, and drums, banned from three pubs.
So, if, like, have you, either of you been to London? I'm assuming not.
I have not.
No.
Okay. I've been to London, Ontario. That doesn't count, though.
No, well, it's not the UK. It's not the UK. And it's like
No.
real funny because I was like listening to this album and I was like literally getting the I'm back in London sitting at a pub listening to these people watch soccer screaming obscenities at the TV because their team is losing or something. Like, and all of like the mannerisms are here. Like in the lyrics, and I was like, "What is happening here?" I was like, "I'm getting all these like weird feels of me being on vacation in the UK." Yes, it is very well done. I am not someone's cousin, nor am I the only reliable one, but I may be banned from three pubs, so it's not me. John G, is this you?
It is not me.
Oh, come on.
Well, we will just leave listeners to ponder who Oi the Satire or the local offenders are. M and or Sam and or M and or Sam. Any final comments for the listeners out there?
Ooh.
Oi.
Oi.
Yes.
Well, to that end, we will oi it up next week with Aura of the Slackers, and we will see you next week.